Keenan. You wanna come up, Larry? You wanna give us a, overview of what we're looking at?
Sure. Chair Hill, committee members, today before you have House Bill 2098, this is a bill that extends the time during which the tax imposed for funding the emergency management system is proposed to be lifted. Otherwise, that sunset would go into effect December 31st, 2001. The bill in its current form would propose that that sunset be lifted until December 31st, 2009. As I indicated, this relates to the funding of the 911 system. This is a system that the legislature first passed legislation, House Bill 3178, to implement it in 1981. At that time, it was funded by 3% tax on exchange access, and 100% coverage with 911 was achieved by January 1st, 1991. And in the 91 session, the legislature established the enhanced 911 target for January 1st, 2000. So we are dealing with ongoing funding issues. There has been preliminary reports on the use of the 911 system done in the past. There's always been issues somewhat controversial relating to assessments of the optimal number of public safety answering points. And that issue still is one that is being wrestled with today and perhaps even in the future. There are consultants' reports that were ordered to be done relative to this bill and the sunset. At some future point, the committee will need to review and possibly take a presentation from the consultant who provided those reports as relevant background. As I understand, today's hearing is to receive public testimony related to this bill and the system.
Thank you. Tina, Kim, Lauren, you're gonna lead off here.
I'll do that.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Hasina Squires, and I appear before you today in support of House Bill 2098. On behalf of the Oregon chapters of the Associated Public Safety Communications Officers and the National Emergency Number Association, I've submitted a packet of testimony to you, which is fairly comprehensive, and rather than read all of that testimony into the record, which I'm sure you would so much enjoy with your eyes glazing over, my packet of testimony includes letters of support from the Oregon Fire Chiefs Association, the Oregon Association Chiefs of Police, Oregon Fire District Directors Association, the League of Oregon Cities, Washington County Consolidated Communications Agency, Southern Oregon Regional Communications, Linn County Sheriff's Office, City of Lake Oswego Police Department, City of Portland, Douglas County Sheriff's Office, Josephine County 911 Agency, City of Ontario Police Department, Tillamook County Emergency Communications District, the City of Astoria Police Department, the Amhill Communications Agency, and the City of Newburgh Police Department. Obviously, the extension of the 911 tax is a fairly significant issue for the public safety community, and we urge you to extend the 911 tax sunset to the year 2009. My testimony has just a brief background in it, and I'd just like to go over that with you for the committee's benefit about how 911 came about in the state of Oregon. Prior to the advent of the 911 system, callers in need of emergency assistance would have to consult their local telephone directories, which contained different listings of multiple telephone numbers for various police, fire, and emergency medical agencies. There was not just one number that people used to be able to pick up the phone and call. If one small child fell down and they needed an ambulance, they'd have to consult the front of their telephone book to look for the ambulance company's phone number or the if someone broke into your home, the police department's number. The first 911 system in Oregon was a basic 911 system established in March of 1971 in the small town of Milton Freewater. By 1980, the number of basic 911 systems had grown to 39, and by the end of 1981, the number had more than doubled to 80. Legislation directed toward statewide implementation of 911 was introduced in 1975, 1977, and 1979. But failed at the legislature due to the lack of a well-defined funding mechanism and lack of support between both industry and local government. In 1981, the legislature issued a mandate for statewide 911 service, and in that mandate, the legislation called for every public safety and private safety answering agency in this state shall establish or participate in the 911 emergency reporting system. The 1981 mandate was issued based on the premise of local control, despite the fact that in addition to the approximately 80 basic 911 systems, approximately 220 dispatch centers also existed. Central dispatch and consolidation of systems were encouraged throughout the initial implementation of effort, and permanent 911 funding became the catalyst for that to make public safety more unified and for that consolidation to occur. By the time the state mandate for basic 911 was completed, which was 10 years later in 1991, 60 primary public safety answering points and 31 secondary PSAPs were providing basic 911 service in the state of Oregon. These PSAPs provided the facilities for receiving and processing calls for police, fire, medical service for over 800 agencies. On January 1, 1991, Oregon became only the sixth state in the United States with 911 service available on a statewide basis. The initial implementation effort encouraging cooperation and consolidation has resulted in an extremely efficient public safety system that currently includes today 56 PSAPs, 16 secondary PSAPs, and three rural or regional dispatch centers operated by the Oregon State Police. To move on to the funding, how that initial funding was set up was initial funding of the program in 1981 was instituted as a 3% charge on subscribers' telephone lines. In 1991, the legislature increased that surcharge from 3% to 5%. To provide the state's 911 program to require them for enhanced 911 service. The fundamental difference being between basic and enhanced 911 service is that basic service callers must tell the 911 caller where they are calling from, their location. In an enhanced 911 system, callers' locations are automatically provided to the call taker. In 1995, the legislature converted the 5% tax to a flat fee of 75 cents. Per exchange access line, including wireless, to provide local governments with greater revenue stability and predictability. The current 911 tax is scheduled to sunset on December 31st of the year 2001. If allowed to sunset, the last distribution made to local jurisdictions would take place on March 21st of 2002. The current funding allocation breakdown is fairly simple. 57% of the 75 cents per line, 57.5% is distributed to cities and counties on a per capita basis. 35% of the monies are earmarked into the enhanced 911 funds, which pays for PSAP common network services, FCC phase one wireless services, and other technical types of issues associated with the 911 program. The state emergency management program is currently authorized to take 4% of the monies of the 75 cents total generated for their program. I'm happy to say that they are one of the more, pardon me, non-greedy, very efficient types of state agencies, and they don't take all of the 4% of that they are authorized to do according to statute. They use approximately 3% of those monies, which leaves more monies to be allocated to cities and counties. In conclusion, I'd just like to say that the state's 911 tax is an essential revenue source that provides approximately 20% of each agency's total budget for 911 services. If the tax is not extended, Oregon's PSAPs would have approximately 9 months to develop alternative funding for 911 or reduce the current level of service being provided to the citizens of Oregon. In addition, fiscal year budgets for the year 2001-2002 would need to be adjusted to reflect a loss of fourth quarter revenue. This legislation is supported by fire, police, emergency medical services, both private and public agencies, cities, counties, special districts, and we urge your support of the legislation.
Okay, let me interrupt you, sir. Representative Johnson, do you want to come up now? If I could. That's I'm going to let Representative Johnson go so she can continue on with her work. Representative Johnson, I think we need one other seat.
Thank you for that courtesy, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm State Representative Betsy Johnson, House District 1, and I'm here with the director of Columbia 911 Communications District, and I'm going to ask her to offer our testimony.
Thank you very much for the courtesy of allowing us to testify in front of everyone else. Representative Johnson's schedule is real busy. I'm sure you can relate to that. Chairman Hill, members of the committee, my name is Sally Jones, administrator of the Columbia 911 Communications District. I appear before you today to present testimony in favor of extending the sunset of the 911 excise tax as proposed in House Bill 2098. I am testifying on behalf of the Board of Directors of the Columbia 911 Communications District and on behalf of the 21 police, fire, and ambulance services and additional 9 related agencies in Columbia County that we provide call answering and dispatch services for. The Columbia 911 Communications District was formed to provide 911 call answering and dispatch services for all of Columbia County and small portions of Multnomah and Clatsop counties. District operations are funded by property taxes and by the 911 excise tax funding mechanism. The district was formed because the smaller public safety agencies in our county could no longer pay user fees under the former intergovernmental organizational structure. A taxing district structure was proposed as an alternative, and the voters approved the formation of the district in 1989 and then the tax base in 1990. We're governed by a 5-member elected board of directors who then appoint 5 citizens to our budget committee. The board governs with the statutory participation of the 911 advisory committee, which consists of all the police chiefs, fire chiefs, ambulance managers, the county emergency manager, and the road department manager for Columbia County. I also represent the Special Districts Association of Oregon as that organization's immediate past president and member of the board of directors. SDAO supports this tax extension as one of its highest priorities for this legislative session. In 1984, the first call placed on an enhanced 911 telephone system in Oregon saved a life. I know because I took that call when I worked for Clackamas County 911. The woman caller screamed, "Just get here. You've been here before. My mother's having a heart attack. Just get here." And she hung up. No name, no address, no phone number. Under the former basic 911 system, her call would not even have been routed to me. It would have gone to another dispatch center entirely, and it would not have included the location of where she was calling from. But because the enhanced system routed her call to me, she reached the center that could dispatch the closest ambulance. And because the enhanced system gave us the location of the call and the correct piece of equipment or the correct ambulance service to send, we were able to send, paramedics were on the scene before I could even confirm the address. And I called her back, couldn't even confirm the address before we got there. The doctors told her that the second saved using that enhanced system saved her mother's life. Seconds. That is what enhanced 911 is all about. Seconds that save people's lives. And that is what the 911 excise tax pays for. That first phone call and the associated system was built in Clackamas County by a partnership of the 911 excise tax and local resources. The next extension of the 911 excise tax brought the enhanced 911 life-saving technology statewide to all of the 911 centers. As a result, 15 years after I took that first enhanced 911 call, I watched the first 911 enhanced call being taken in Columbia County. Columbia County and many other 911 systems that serve rural populations would not be able to provide this level of service without the 911 excise tax mechanism. Under the management of the State of Oregon 911 program, utilizing this tax resource, the enhanced 911 phone bills are paid for each 911 center. The equipment, maintenance costs, and upgrade needs are paid for through that texting mechanism. And then the division also oversees the distribution of a portion of the tax to fund the certification and certification maintenance program for 911 workers. A third portion of the tax is then distributed to the individual 911 centers according to the population served under either a rural or a metropolitan formula. And that represents a significant portion of each 911 center's operating base. The combined revenue from this source currently pays approximately 28% of the operating costs for Columbia 911. If the source is not renewed, it is likely that we would need to lay off one-third of our staff, our co-answering and dispatch staff, half of our admin staff, and very likely we would have to make the horrible decision of potentially eliminating enhanced 911 and return to a basic 911 system. The 911 excise tax is an appropriate mechanism to fund the 911 call answering in our state. The tax is being appropriately administered through the state 911 program office. The state program has established a trusted process of relying on local government participation in addressing the service delivery requirements that each of us have. And they have led this program into one that is admired throughout the nation. This model of partnership between the state and local service delivery is important to understand in this whole discussion. 72% of the funding for Columbia 911 is from local property taxes. If you were to follow the flow of a 911 call, this partnership makes a lot of sense. A caller dials 911 from anywhere in the state. The call is routed to the correct 911 center. The 911 worker who answers that call is trained to a statewide standard, and that certification is maintained. And then the information sent along is the location of the caller, as well as the correct agency to send to get help to them. The state oversees this piece of the system and pays for it with the 911 excise tax. From that point forward, the information gathered by the 911 worker from the caller defines the response of the local emergency public safety entities, and that is paid for by local resources. It is also appropriate that the 911 excise tax be the source for answering the next challenge in our industry. Just as the 911 excise tax paid for basic 911 and paid for enhanced 911 and paid for the 911 workers certification. The next challenge is how to provide location identification to 911 call takers for wireless and for cellular calls for emergency assistance. That technology standard is right around the corner, and we must be prepared to take advantage of that life-saving potential. The public safety agencies in Columbia County and the 800 member districts of the Special Districts Association of Oregon and Representative Betsy Johnson urge your support for extending the sunset of this crucial funding mechanism to 2009. I thank you very much for the opportunity to testify, and I would be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Any questions? Yes, in Columbia County, all your agencies came together. Do you have any other PSAPs in Columbia County?
No, we did have prior to the formation of our district, but we consolidated into one PSAP.
I'm very interested in terms of, we've got 56 PSAPs, 36 counties, so there's some multiple there.
Sure.
And I'm trying to understand in terms of how to the best use these resources in terms of to get the efficiencies out of this.
You bet.
So that we don't have a situation where we start having less and less dollars available to upgrade the technology and such. So I'm just curious in terms of your opinion, in terms of if there was any difficulties in terms of in Columbia County, were you involved in the consolidation in Columbia County in terms of in those issues that allowed you to be
the
successful?
The primary difficulties we faced was to be able to meet the individual service delivery needs and expectations within the resources allocated for the district. We were able to meet that because the public safety agencies were the ones that designed the how service would be delivered by the district. That's kind of why I was emphasizing in my testimony that 72% is funded by local sources based on what their expectation is. On what kind of service will be delivered, and then the other 28% is, where that call gets answered up to that point. I firmly believe that the reason why this partnership of state and local works so well in Oregon is because the state oversees that first piece, and then the locals oversee and fund the rest of it. And that can only be determined on a local level, in my opinion. For example, I've worked in five different 911 centers, and each one of them has different responsibilities to their users and to their citizens. In one place, I did everything from go with the officers on domestic violence calls and help search female suspects. In another place, I took dog licenses and parking permit things and answered a front desk environment. In another place, I did nothing but take the call and dispatch the call, and that's it. I had no contact with any, you know, any other thing, and it or any other piece of the process or any other public service. In Columbia County, we take the call, we dispatch the call, and then we provide a lot of support for non-emergency public safety responses as well. And that works really well for us. But, you know, we'd go next door to Clatsop County or over to Washington County, and they'd need something entirely different. That's the beauty of this local-state partnership. It meets the local needs.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have nothing to add.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Can you tell us exactly what's the difference between 911 and enhanced 911?
Senator Yee, the want to back up a little. Before 911, and I did work for dispatch centers back then, there was seven-digit numbers, and the public had to figure out what the seven-digit number was for ambulance, police, fire. And they had to look it up in the phone book or hope the operator knew which place to transfer them to. Then came basic 911, and everybody could remember a three-digit phone number, and those phone calls were routed by the exchange, the first three digits of the phone number, to the 911 center that answered most of the calls for that exchange. Enhanced 911 breaks up that exchange. In other words, you've got neighbors both with 543, the first three digits of their phone number, but there's a county line that cuts through the middle, and ambulance and fire and police are dispatched by this dispatch center over here, and the other side of the street is dispatched over here. When enhanced 911 routes the call to the right 911 center, and along with that information, it sends the location of the landline caller, and it sends information about the correct police agency and fire agency and ambulance that goes to that address. So it really speeds things up.
Oh, I see.
That's why it saves the lives, is it cuts down on those critical seconds, particularly being heart attack and, you know, life-threatening kind of call.
Oh, I see. Mm-hmm.
Representative Lowe?
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Have you ever gone down? Have you ever, has the system failed?
Since we, since we put in enhanced 911, that system has not failed. And it's at a remarkable degree of accuracy. The database is accurate, remarkably so. We have gone down when there was an inadvertent backhoe cut that, severed a fiber optic cable, and it took some time to set up a loop around that. We went down under the basic system during the flood of 96 because of landslides destroying the facilities for the telephone connections. But except for those things, I can only think of one example where we went down because of a programming error on the part of the telephone company, and that's oversimplifying the problem. But
that's maybe four or five times.
In 10 years at Columbia County.
Uh-huh. Okay. And did you have redundancy capability at any of those times?
Well, no. In the beginning, there was not any redundancy capability. We're fairly typical, I think, of rural centers where there's one or two, well, two lines coming out of each city, Clatskanie, Vernonia, Rainier, St. Helens, Capoose, and Mist. But they're all in one cable, and if it gets chopped, then, you know, we're out of luck. There is now under Senate Bill 622 some money from Quest that is funding a kind of redundancy, for lack of a better term, that kind of allows for some looping around those cuts, and so you get restoral more quickly. And I may not have that technologically correct, but that's the way I understand it. We've also been able to set up some alternate routing of the 911 line, certain areas of our 911 lines where it'll be sent via microwave for part of the route and another Another redundant route will be routed through the fiber so that, you know, if fiber gets cut, at least some of the calls are getting through, routed through microwave. But we don't have full redundancy at all in our area.
Thank you.
Any further questions?
Thank you very much.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, my name is Ken Kime, and I'm the State 911 Program Manager from the Morgan Emergency Management Division of the Oregon State Police. I'm here today in support of HB 2098, which seeks to extend the 911 telephone tax from its current expiration date of December 31st, 2001, December 31st, 2009, for a total of four legislative sessions. This tax has funded the Oregon 911 program since 1981 in various forms and has allowed Oregon to implement the nationally recognized 911 telephone answering system and network at each of the 56 primary public safety answering points, answering emergency calls from Oregon citizens on landline and wireless systems across Oregon. Currently, the 911 tax at 75 cents per access line or device capable of accessing 911 collected in the third quarter, July-September 2000 period, $7.1 million. This total was distributed in the following way: to the Department of Revenue for collection expenses of up to a maximum of 1%, to OEM for administrative costs of up to a maximum of 4%, and 35% to the Enhanced 911 subaccount for direct payments for E911 telephone equipment, network, and database costs. The remaining amount is distributed to local governments to be passed through to the 911 jurisdictions they belong to. Oregon has undergone tremendous growth in telecommunications services, going from $1,789,789 landlines subject to the tax in 1995 to 2,937,000 landlines in the last third quarter telephone tax collection. Included in this total is approximately 750,000 wireless subscribers. This funding from the telephone tax is crucial to local government's ability to provide quality and current 911 technology through Oregon. 911 telephone tax is not continued. The last distribution to local governments and direct pay on E911 costs will occur on March 31st, 2002. At this time, local governments will have to offset the loss of state funding in their systems or be forced to make drastic cuts in 911 call takers as well as 911 service levels. Currently, the Oregon 911 system is providing enhanced 911 services statewide for both wireless and wireline calls and meeting the FCC rules for cell site routing and callback numbers for wireless callers in 911 with five wireless carriers statewide. Our current focus is meeting the requirements for FCC Phase 2, which calls for locating a wireless caller on the face of the earth within 70 meters and route the location and caller's number to the proper PSAP for service. This requirement calls for extensive geographic information system data and mapping systems to be implemented in all of Oregon's 56 PSAPs. The Oregon 911 program is also working on various other issues affecting 911 service levels, such as disaster backup services, automated statewide call collection, voice over the internet 911, automatic crash notification along with Mayday systems, and hearing impaired 911 issues. The Oregon 911 program, along with the public safety community in Oregon, urge your passage of House Bill 2098 to continue the 911 system in Oregon and its current program and future goals to ensure Oregon citizens have access to a quality and proven 911 system. I've included in your packet some Oregon 911 program information, some diagrams basically giving you the basic routing of wireline and wireless 911, and a description of the 911 revenue stream and how it's distributed throughout the state. I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Yes, Kim, the statute requires OEM to do the two consultants' reports. Was there a point where you were going to make a presentation or summarize the findings from those for the committee, if not today, some other day?
I'd be glad to. There was. We were planning to do that and got caught up in how fast this thing moved, but we are planning to do that.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Laura Imason. I'm the Regional Director of External Affairs for AT&T Wireless, and I'm here today to offer our support to House Bill 2098, the extension of the sunset for the surcharge for 911, and also to convey the Oregon Telecommunications Association's Legislative Committee endorsement of this legislation. I also am here to offer an amendment, which I believe you have before you. It's the Dash 1 Amendment, and to briefly explain what they are. This would implement the Mobile Telecommunications Sourcing Act, which is federal legislation signed into law last August. Oregon is a little less complicated than some states because we don't have a sales tax, but this legislation is designed to make it clear which jurisdiction has the right to tax a wireless subscriber and to ensure that they're not double taxed if they happen to be roaming. With the case of 911, what it does is clarify the kind of gentleman's agreement we've had with OEM about which subscribers they collect on and which they don't. For instance, if you lived in Ontario and had your cell phone billed to Ontario but actually had a Boise number because you did business there and wanted customers to have that number, this would clarify that OEM does have jurisdiction to tax that call, that phone on the per month charge. So we would ask that you adopt the Dash 1 amendment, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Amendments are to this.
I guess I do. You must forgive me, Ken, if I wasn't, didn't quite get the data. But either you or Nora probably could answer. When are we going to be able to have pinpoint of sources on cell phones, 911 emergency calls?
Chairman Hill, Representative Lowe. Currently, October 1st, 2001 is the deadline to make the choices, and from that point, it's approximately 6 months. Wireless companies have 6 months to provide the data, depending on whether the PSAP is ready to receive that data. Currently, we're working on a project that we've talked to this committee about before to do a pilot on accepting that information so that we can determine our statewide costs and get that equipment and the database out to the PSAP so they're ready to receive those calls.
Where's the pilot going to be?
Right now, we're in negotiations with a county that's close to Salem now to do that, and hopefully we'll be starting that pilot April 1st. Basically, what we were looking for, Representative Lowe, was a county that had a mix of rural and some larger city, but had a mix of some GIS already in the county and a lot of rural that wasn't that way. We could actually get a feel for what it's going to take to build a database using both types of systems. Okay. The metro system, the metro counties are advanced. They wouldn't give us a real test of what it's going to take to do the majority of counties out there that are in the middle of the GIS
that makes sense.
Progress.
Thank you.
I know we've touched on this briefly before, that not every wireless company has connected in. So we have companies that aren't even in phase one. We have a deadline to move to phase two. Where are we and how are we going to get this? And then my understanding is the FCC is looking to delay implementation on the standards. Is that a correct statement?
Chairman Hill, there's a lot of talk going on, but right now the last thing that came out of the FCC is they upheld their October 1st, 2001 deadline. Currently, we have 9 companies that we're dealing with in Oregon. We have 6 of them that are working in the program to provide phase one. The other 3, for various reasons, size, cost, et cetera, haven't come to the plate yet with phase one. But when we have the database ready to go, we will ask them to provide phase two, and they will have a 6-month period to provide that service to us under mandate by the FCC.
Have we formally requested every company to provide phase one? Because my understanding is there's a request that has to be made. And in some of the discussions previously, I don't know if I've been told that the formal request hasn't been made, but then I got some information back that you had actually had. But have we asked all 9 wireless companies to participate in wireless 911?
Representative Hill, yes, we have. And we have issues with 3 of the companies that, because of their size, haven't been able to do that. And those are still ongoing.
Large or too small?
Too small. Their costs they're coming up with are way out of line with other costs that we've dealt with, and their equipment, source of switches, et cetera, are issues that will be cost prohibitive to do that. But we have continuing talks going on with them. Matter of fact, we've just moved another step farther with one of those companies.
Okay, and so I'm just curious in terms of if they still say no, is there an arbitration step in that? I mean, I'm not familiar enough with the process, and maybe Laura,
Representative Hill, technically they would be out of compliance with the phase one order of the FCC. And technically, I suppose OEM could file a complaint, but if they're still in negotiations, you know, I assume that that's the way they would want to resolve it. But once a request, a formal request is made, the carrier has to provide it within 6 months, as long as the PSEP can receive the data and can get cost recovery for their cost. So if it's simply an issue of cost, and that carrier's costs are quite different than the other carriers, the PSEPs may choose not to pay for those.
Okay, so let me understand, if we follow the dollar. We collect 75 cents, gets chopped up at the state into different pots. Well, the pot that ultimately gets to the PSAP is making payments back to the wireless company for cost recovery, or, I mean, where's cost recovery? Who's responsible for cost recovery?
The monies are collected and they should divvy it up into several pots. There's a pot that comes to the state that's responsible for providing enhanced 911 costs, and the state is paying directly those 911 costs. The state is acting as the agent for the 56 PSAPs and negotiating a contract with the company. This was something we started with AWS back in 1995, which was one of the first in the country to do that. So rather than having to negotiate with 56 answering points, we're able to do a statewide contract and get a better price. And so we're doing that now. And so the costs that we're getting aren't even coming anywhere near what our base cost has been for these other five or six companies that are providing the service. So we've been negotiating with these other companies to try to get that, work that out. When we are ready to accept the data after the trial and we start implementing the phase two wireless location technology, we will be making another formal request for everyone to provide phase two and going to phase two. And then we will look at the cost recovery issue there. It's a little bit different than phase one was, and try to work those issues out, but we will hold those people to the 6 month deadline, and then we will ask the FCC for compliance. We have no compliance authority at the state level, or the authority to go out and do something to those folks other than try to negotiate a contract. The FCC would handle that.
But are you prepared then to go to the FCC if you can't? And I'm just...
Senator Hill, yes, we are. We would go to the FCC when we're ready to do phase two to get that in there.
Well, I'm talking about phase one.
We have not gone to the FCC at this point on phase one for those three companies, no. We're still talking with them.
Okay.
We'd like to resolve it that way.
We got time here, and we got in October. You need to have your deal set for phase two in October. You know, it's March, so I'm just curious in terms of, are we going to have spotty wireless E911? You know, and so it's going to be an issue in terms of, you know, safety and those types of things. If we don't even have basic.
We have basic 911. We have that from all those.
Enhanced 911 phase one.
Right.
And I'm just curious in terms of.
Basically, in Oregon now, in those areas, we were kind of ahead of the ball game in that back in when we set the system up, we routed all calls based on the antenna site. We actually did that manually in cooperation with the cellular companies as to where these companies, where these calls would go. We route those calls that way. When we get to phase two and we're capable of having the plan done, knowing what date we're going to be ready to go, we will issue the letters of request for phase two and go to that within the six-month time limit, because we will be ready to handle that. And we expect all companies to comply with that rule. Right now in the phase one, we're still, like I said, negotiating with those three companies. I think, you know, some of the issues might be we're getting very close to phase two. Why not just go to phase two? That's kind of where some of the talk that we're getting.
So is phase two a completely different system? Or is it an enhancement to phase one?
It's an enhancement of phase one. But the systems out there, phase two will provide the location technology with the either receiving a lat and long via the handset or being a network solution of this, for the system.
Laura?
Mr. Chairman, just to be clear, you have to, from our company's perspective, phase one has to be implemented before you can implement phase two. So essentially, if a company doesn't implement phase one, they won't be able to do phase two, and they may well be at a competitive disadvantage because their customers, when they call and the PSAP doesn't have any data on where they are, what their number callback number is, are going to wake up to that. And so they're going to be in a marketplace where their competitors have something more to offer. So So there is an incentive.
I want names.
That's the question.
Can you tell us which companies are in compliance?
The shorter list would be who's not.
Currently, we have AT&T Wireless, Verizon Wireless, AT&T, Verizon, Sprint, Quest, Triton, and the RCC Holdings, and the we're just getting close to contract finish with VoiceStream. We have three smaller companies that haven't come to an agreement yet.
Those are?
U.S. Cellular, Ramcell, and we have a contract with VoiceStream. Okay. Just two then, excuse me. We just got into the VoiceStream, so I had them in the rule. So it's U.S. Cellular and Ramcell.
Thank you.
Any further questions for this panel?
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Appreciate the opportunity.
I'm going to call up. We have Lynn Reeves, Central Lane Communications. We'll call up those who are farthest away first. Welcome.
Chair Hill, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Lynn Reeves, and I'm the Director of Central Lane Communications, Eugene. I'm here today in support of House Bill 2098. The revenue that this tax provides means $1.2 million a year to Central Lane Communications. Central Lane Communications is a primary public safety answering point administered by the City of Eugene. We leverage this $1.2 million against $2.9 million of local money to provide 911 and dispatch. Our service area includes the cities of Eugene, Springfield, Junction City, Coburg, Veneta, Cresswell, Lowell, and over half the land area of Lane County. In addition, we serve small portions of Lynn and Benton County. Our total population served is just over 277,000. This tax, again, provides approximately 28% of our total agency budget. If the tax were not extended, Central Lane would develop and implement a new revenue source by April 2002. We are, again, here today to ask that you extend this tax to December 2009. Thank you for the opportunity to testify, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions? Central Lane, do you provide all the 911 service for your county, or are there other police apps in the county?
No, there are approximately four public safety answering points in Central Lane. Central Lane Communications, Eastern Lane Communications, Western Lane, and South Lane, which is Cottage Grove. Western Lane being Florence, Eastern Lane being Oak Ridge.
Is there a reason that you haven't consolidated? Is it?
I think there are several reasons, and the first one I can point to is service. And there's an efficiency of service. Again, describing the size of Lane County, I can only give you an example. Florence, the coast. 911 calls goes there. I would prefer that Florence answer that. I don't know Seal Rock from the Devil's Toe Elbow. I don't know that area, as you can see. Same thing for Oak Ridge. Oak Ridge answers from the Willamette Pass ski area down Highway 58. They also cover an incredible amount of Forest Service road. Oak Ridge does not know the U of O campus like my dispatchers do. They do not know downtown Eugene. They do not know McKinsey Bridge. Cottage Grove, the same with area. They have a very vast rural area, reservoirs, Cottage Grove Lake, et cetera. They also answer, I believe, small portions of Douglas County. To me, it comes down to a service issue. I think the way the PSAPs are spread out in Lane County is very efficient to serve 911 callers.
From a cost perspective, in terms of the redundancy of the equipment, in terms of the cost associated, you could consolidate and have that knowledge, but you know, you wouldn't have to have expensive equipment replicated in four separate locations.
I think I'd look at the example of Oak Ridge and the service they provide. Again, they're a primary PSAP. There is a good portion of 911 tax going there to provide the equipment, that on-premise equipment. And I believe, and could be making a guess at this, their yearly 911 tax revenue is only about $20,000. Well, I have to measure that against the service. If that 911 caller comes from Oak Ridge, say again, at the Willamette Ski Pass, they dial 911. Right now, they would go straight into the Oak Ridge. Oak Ridge would dispatch the appropriate response. If that changes under a one PSAP scenario and Central Lane is chosen, well, that caller comes down to Eugene. Granted, that's fast. We answer that. We determine, hopefully, they're right there where they say they are. We relay that caller back to Oak Ridge because the dispatch still occurs in Oak Ridge. It doesn't occur in Central Lane. So you have to me, balance that cost against the service to the public.
I guess that assumes that the dispatch isn't consolidated as well.
Correct. The dispatch is not consolidated. And that's a big issue. Even if 911 is consolidated, Florence will still dispatch along that large coastal area. Cottage Grove will still dispatch, and Oak Ridge will still dispatch. We may take those calls, but that caller will be transferred. Granted, it's fast, but the caller still goes back to and talks to a second dispatcher, whereas this present setup now, they're talking to the same dispatcher, same agency. In most cases, I'm going to add that.
Larry?
Could you clarify for me, one of the consultant's findings was that multiple PSAP counties tended to transfer the number of calls, and they estimated that it was about 25% to 30% of the calls were getting transferred from one PSAP to another when there was a multiple. Can you help me understand?
I'm thinking that's PSAP. That's primary to secondary PSAPs. In our county, we very seldom transfer a 911 call to Florence. However, we do transfer calls to, like, for example, the Lane County Sheriff's Office, a secondary PSAP, because we do not dispatch for the Lane County Sheriff's Office. Or we may transfer calls to the Oregon State Police, because we do not dispatch for the Oregon State Police. However, in our county, we dispatch for Eugene Police, Eugene Fire, Springfield Fire, 17 rural fire districts, that core area of Lane County. Did that answer your question?
So you're saying the transfer is not between multiple PSAPs, you're saying it's a transfer from the PSAP to a secondary PSAP?
In most cases, it's a secondary. I'd only guess, though, at the percentage, so I wouldn't want to say. I can get back to you with that, though, for Lane County, anyway.
Any further questions?
I have one. Because you have four PSAPs, are any of these other PSAPs actually set up to be a backup for the other one, electronically or otherwise, for calls to be able to be transferred if one goes down?
I don't believe so. We could, and what has happened in the past, let me back up. Only for the secondaries, for example, if we should have to evacuate, because to my knowledge, 911 has not suffered a major outage in Lane County. Mm-hmm. It's usually the dispatch, something occurs in the dispatch center.
Yeah, yeah.
You have an electrical fire or some other threat, like a terrorist threat, and you have to evacuate the building. So you need to go somewhere. Central Lane has a backup center that we go to, a secondary PSAP like the sheriff's office. They put out public notices, and we would answer their calls.
It's just relevant to the issue of whether or not multiple PSAPs are there for effective backups or not. There's mixed information as to whether they're actually set up to be able to do that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Rob Myers. Welcome.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Rob Myers, and I'm here on behalf of the county courts in Gillum, Sherman, and Wheeler counties. I want to speak in support of House Bill 2098, and out of respect for your busy schedules, I'll keep this brief. Around 5,000 people are scattered across the 4,000 square miles that comprise these three frontier rural counties. We have one pharmacy, 8 out of every 10 miles, county road or gravel, and we're 3 of 57 counties in the United States with no licensed physician. And to make matters even worse, we're 120 miles from the nearest shopping mall. I believe we're also the only three counties in the state of Oregon that does not have its own proprietary PSAP. Continuation of 911 funding is critical for us as we attempt to establish a single PSAP that would serve all three counties. These three counties have saved and accumulated 911 funds for several years to build telecommunications infrastructure that would provide a self-healing wireless ring serving as communications backbone for the three-county PSAP. Our three counties are presently served by 911 dispatch in Morrill County, and while Morrill County does as well as could reasonably be expected, it is simply not feasible to provide adequate 911 emergency services over such a large area. To give you an example, and I don't give this example to be critical of Morrill County, but last fall, a gentleman called in a 911 emergency call with a fire in Morrill and was told politely by the 911 dispatch in Morrill County that the fire was in Grass Valley, 9 miles south of him. And he finally got her convinced that he was looking at the fire because he had his cell phone in his hand, and he was able to get her to believe that the fire was someplace other than where she thought it was. And as and again, I'm not being critical of Morrill County. I'm just saying that when we're talking about, they have their own dispatch issues, and sometimes it's difficult for them to stack theirs over ours. With the continuation of 911 funding, these frontier rural counties could establish and maintain their own PSAP, thereby by improving 911 services, and by extension, enhancing the public health and safety of the 5,000 people who live across this region. Obviously, we do not support any amendments that would preclude the establishment of additional PSAPs, as we feel it is reasonable that a single PSAP serving three counties is sufficient aggregation of need to address the intent of the overall 911 system. And quite frankly, anything less unnecessarily and dangerously compromises the health and safety of every woman, man, and child in these three counties. It is on behalf of those folks that I ask you to vote yes on House Bill 2098 as written, and to vote no on any changes in the bill that would prevent the establishment of a much-needed PSAP in the future rural counties. With that, I'll close, and again, thank you for the opportunity to tell our story.
So, right now, the primary PSAP serving William Sherman and Wheeler counties is Morrill County?
Mr. Chairman, that's correct.
And that you and that these three counties have been receiving distribution from the 911 dollars, and they've been, for lack of a better term, banking the dollars.
Mr. Chairman, that's correct.
So how much money is sitting out there?
Enough to partner in the establishment of the telecommunications backbone. I can't give you an exact number, and I'm not hedging, quite frankly. The judges are all in Washington, D.C., and I they kind of pulled me off the bench to appear on their behalf. But it's sufficient to be one-third each partner in the establishment of this wireless backbone. I think it's somewhere in the area of $250,000 each. I could be wrong on that, but I believe that's fairly close.
Okay. Is there any questions? Thank you.
You got it.
Paul Snyder?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, I'm Paul Snyder, representing Association of Oregon Counties, and I'm here in support of House Bill 2098. I won't take up the committee's time by reiterating testimony that's already been given. We just believe that it's a matter of saving lives. This is an important excise tax to continue. Local governments continue to fund around 70% to 80% of the total cost of responding to these calls, and we think it's the appropriate partnership to continue.
Any questions? Thank you very much. Les Youngmar?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Les Youngmar. I'm the Public Safety Director for the City of Lake Oswego. I'm here to support House Bill, or ask for your support in House Bill 2098. I've submitted a letter that came in your packet, so I won't go over that entirely, but I would like to emphasize a couple of points, just that this funding is critical to us, even though it only represents about 15% of our center budget. In these times, 15% is fairly significant to us, and so we still think it's very important, but I would also like to emphasize that it is a small portion of the budget, and that overall our center is principally supported by our own taxpayers in our service area. But these funds do certainly represent important funds as far as the state's oversight funding goes, which we think is critical to have an independent body supervising that on a statewide basis. And so therefore, I'd like to once again ask for your support on this bill. Are there any questions?
Any questions? The city of Lake Oswego operates their own PSAP.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Is there a reason, a history or something in terms of why in Clackamas County there isn't a consolidation in terms of in a relatively urban area, a lot of hood? But I'm just curious in terms of why you have not moved to consolidation, which would seem to gain greater efficiency of the use of these dollars.
Good question. I don't know how far back the history goes in terms of the reason. I've been there 23 years, but I believe right now there's a reason why, and it has to do with different levels of service. Clackamas County is a county that has a considerable rural and forested area, and then quite a bit of an urban area. In our particular, I can only speak for our agency, and since we're getting into the multi PSAP, I will say that we represent. We also dispatch for the city of West Lynn in 3 fire districts. So we service an area of about 75,000 people. The reason I believe that the city of West Lynn and Lake Oswego enjoy one center or like to is because we have a much higher level of service than you might typically get in a consolidated center. That's why this only represents about 15% of our budget instead of 28% of our budget, because we also do dispatch for everything from animal control, ordinance enforcement, we do all warrant confirmations, we do the all off-duty hour dispatching for both cities' public works departments. So there are those types of services that aren't typical in a larger consolidated center.
So let me ask a question, since this seems to be a theme I'm hearing. How do you break out the fact that you've got these dedicated funds going for a dedicated purpose? How do you, you got infrastructure dollars that are being there, you've got a phone, somebody calls, and I'm just curious how you account for the fact that you're doing these other things with the same body sitting in a chair answering 911, but like do, as you said, the dog, animal control. How do you do that from a budgetary standpoint so that we're not using enhanced 911 dollars to dispatch animal control?
Well, the enhanced 911 dollars don't pay for the dispatching, for starters. I think we sometimes get that confused. I mean, they pay for the service up to the dispatcher, essentially, and, of course, some measurement of standards and some critical issues like that. We also have separate lines, 7-digit lines for ordinance enforcement, so it's pretty easy to prioritize whether you're going to take a 911 call or a 7-digit call. And we emphasize that and let people know that that's the way it's going to be, that if they call for an ordinance enforcement type call. Now, there are those calls where people say, well, gee, I'm not sure if it's 911 or not. We take those. But it's easy to prioritize those, especially when you have a computer to dispatch. It's very easy to prioritize.
So when you did that in terms of a percentage of those dollars and other funds that came in to pay for the U.S. telephone system versus 911 paying for it?
Well, certainly the support, ongoing support, yes. I can't tell you the breakdown when we put the system in. We actually originally paid for our enhanced 911 system, as a matter of fact, when it went in, and then we were reimbursed several years later. So you say we supported that entire time, as a matter of fact.
Any questions?
May I answer one, or make a comment on redundancy? Oh, you did ask about that. One of the advantages we enjoy, at least in our county, and I haven't heard anybody else mention that, is we can switch with CECOM, the larger dispatching PSAP in the county, in terms of transferring our lines over. It does take about 3 minutes, which, in fact, if you're in a really massive, like during the earthquake when everyone's wanting to leave the building, 3 minutes is a long time, but it can be done. And of course, where that's really valuable is should you have an individual center problem like a bomb threat or a fire or something like that that takes your particular system down. And it does afford us the opportunity at least being able to move our 911 calls to the other center or vice versa. dispatching all those calls might be a different issue, but at least someone's there to answer the phone when that happens.
Thank you. Sir?
One question. One of the requirements that the law had in place was that the multiple PSAP counties were supposed to be able to provide some data about the cost effectiveness of operating multiple PSAPs, and there wasn't a lot of real good information or data. Has your county done anything to provide data or develop data that might help with that kind of an analysis? Or
I'm not positive of that, although I know that they all, of course, the state study that was done, that everyone contributed to that, and I believe that they did address some of those issues in that study. I don't know if you had an opportunity to look at that or not.
Just didn't know if your county did anything specific for that.
I see none. You want to come up and comment on that?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, again, Hiskin Esquires on behalf of APCO NENA. In response to your question, Larry, as far as the Clackamas County multi-PSAP study, Lake Oswego, if you'll look in the consultant's report, was actually one of the few PSAPs, primary public safety answering points, that the consultant seemed to deem having sufficiently answered the cost efficiency and level of service issue. So I just wanted to point that out, because in particular, Lake Oswego was singled out by the consultant, sort of met that mandate by the state. And with me is Ella Gossett from the city of Milwaukee. So since we're on a Clackamas County roll, right, continue.
My name is Ella Gossett from the Milwaukee 911 Center, and I'm here to also support House Bill 2098, requesting you to extend the tax. The tax is critical to my agency in that it does fund approximately 15 to 18% of my budget. While that seems like a small amount, it's a large amount to a small city. In response to something Hasina just said, you asked about consolidation. We used to have 9 public safety answering point centers in our county. We have done, I can't remember, but approximately 3 to 4 studies, large studies, which I'd be happy to give you copies of, and we have consolidated down to 4. I recently have done a negotiation with the City of Lake Oswego to consolidate. We had local hearings at our city council, and there was a large outcry from our citizenry to keep our center. One of the reasons being is we just built a brand new facility 5 years ago with a brand new center and housing, fire, police, and 911. And so the citizens were quite alarmed about possibly closing our center. But my main focus here today is to request you to extend the tax, and I'm more than welcome to answer any questions.
So if I might just query, so you decided not to consolidate and save money in the future because you split money in the past?
Well, actually, we are doing some redundancy backup things. Right now, we are negotiating with Lake Oswego to go off of their CAD system, which would go into our center, so we could be backups for each other. And so if one of the centers by chance went down by a backhoe or up the mishap, then we could support each other that direction. So we are doing a lot of things. We do training that we support each other with, which we don't charge each other for. We do a lot of things that we don't charge each other for locally.
Any other questions? Thank you.
Mary Botkin.
Hello, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Mary Botkin with AFSCME. We have the honor of representing literally hundreds of 911 telecommunication operators, and I think I've been in the building too long. I remember when we passed this bill originally. It was a great bill. It was a great way to start a funding stream that allowed us to go to an enhanced system, and the goal at the time was to have a statewide enhanced system available to all citizens. I think it's important to remember that when this started, children couldn't call for help. 2-year-olds now know how to call 911. It's a great system. It was a great idea. And what we need to do now is to continue its funding stream and to move forward on enhancing system even further. like Representative Lowe, you know, I kind of glanced down to make sure I had one of the cell phones that is in compliance with the enhanced, and I do. I can tell you that I'd be changing carriers if I didn't. I think it's a great idea, and I think that, you know, the important thing is that as we look at consolidation, that we not lose track of the fact this is a very diverse state, and that as we move forward, we need to look at ways to not only consolidate where it makes sense and to economize where we can so that we can move to a better system, but that we do it in a way that makes some sense for those rural areas that have very specific needs. And, you know, for those of us who travel in Eastern Oregon, we do know that there are areas where you're just not sure where you are, and you need somebody who lives there to tell you how to get there. And there's a lot of challenges that go along with this, but, you know, the funding is important. Coming back here every couple of years to kind of beg, borrow, and steal for more funding. I mean, we just need to move this forward. I mean, I'd love to see us get rid of the sunset completely, but I'm also realistic enough to know that that probably won't happen. And if we can just extend it out, then I think that makes sense. And we're here to support it on behalf of all the telecommunications operators. You know, we also did the BPSST certification bill a long time ago. I was here for that as well. You know, so that we would have some standard measure of quality of our telecommunicators and our dispatchers. And I think that was a great step forward. It professionalized the system even more. And it takes a long time to train a really good dispatcher. And I don't have anything to add other than we really support this bill. We're going to do everything we can to help get it passed. And we're here to help the committee in their deliberations.
Thank you. Are there any questions in there? Thank you.
Michael Funk.
Is there any no? Is there any opposition?
Welcome. Thank you. My name is Michael Funk. I'm a representative for the city of Gladstone and their 911 PSAP center. Senator Hill, committee, thank you for the opportunity to come speak to you in support of House Bill 2098. The city of Gladstone wishes to extend that they are in support of extending the tax. It's very important to the city of Gladstone. We are in Clackamas County. We're one of four PSAPs in there. It's about 15, as best I can estimate, it's about approximately 15% of the city of Gladstone's communications budget. Gladstone historically is a full-service community, having their own senior center, library, communications, police department, fire department, and communications center. Our citizens very, very much desire to have each one of those aspects in our city. We think that that's important, that things are answered locally, things are done locally. Gladstone runs on bare bones. Gladstone is noted to be a very tight, penny-pinching city. It'll allow us to provide a higher level of service to our community if we're able to answer locally and have these funds to do that. The 911 funds that we do get are used very, very carefully. We do not, at this time, use those funds to pay for salaries of the folks working in dispatch, but rather we use that for repair, support, update of our 911 equipment and the system to help keep it running and going.
Let me ask this in terms of, do you want a surplus in terms of dollars? Which is because if it's working, you don't need to replace it. And in terms of sort of in that phase of bringing on additional services in terms of with enhanced wireless and that kind of stuff. I'm just curious in terms of, you know, do you spend every dollar that comes into the fund from the state, or are you seeing the running a surplus waiting for the next enhancement?
Right now, I believe that there is a small surplus, and it's for exactly what you just mentioned. It's for the next update that's coming along. Some of the technology we have is not the newest out there. We purchase that new technology as we can afford it. Without the 911 funds, I think that it's going to put a larger burden on the city of Gladstone to be able to go there. But small current surplus.
So let me ask you a question. Why wouldn't you consolidate, look to consolidate in terms of we've seen that you would be able to pool these dollars coming in and provide the more enhanced technology? I can't imagine in terms of in Clackamas County and Gladstone that you would have any degradation of service in the consolidation. Is it just turf? Is that what we're talking about here? Versus bringing this together in terms of making sure that we've got the best technology out there and providing the best service?
I think I've heard the term turf used a lot. I think that that's inevitable. Yeah, I think there is some turf issues here. I think more importantly, the issue that we're looking at is the service that we're able to provide at a local level. We do believe that it is a much better service overall at the local level. The technology that we are using is basically what the PSAPs are using around us. We're on the same radio frequency currently. We have the same recording systems. When the 911 call comes in, where we record the tape or we have a system. I don't know that it's the same system as what somebody else has, but it is efficient. It's working correctly. We feel that basically if one of the other ladies mentioned that because of the geographical location of her area, our dispatchers know our city very well. Our dispatchers know our police department very well and the people in our fire department. We have the opportunity to interact with them very closely. We have a city net frequency as well as our F123 that all police in the county or all fire in the county talk on. So that interaction directly between our PSAP and the people that are out there in the field is very, very important to us. When you get into a larger dispatching center where they have so many people coming from so many different directions, I think you very, very much lose that personal contact, the ability to know the city, the ability to make that phone call. When your department is a little bit smaller, you don't usually have 10 911 calls coming in at the same time. The amount of time it takes us to answer a 911 call and dispatch it to the people that are right there goes very quickly in the city of Gladstone. Not saying that other dispatch centers don't do it very quickly either, but I think that knowing the people that you're working with on a first-name basis makes a big difference. And that's where the community of Gladstone feels that there would be an inequity in service if we were to go somewhere else.
Any other questions?
That's my question.
Thank you, sir. Is there anyone else who would like to testify on House Bill 2098? Is there any opposition to House Bill 2098? Anybody willing to step up? No. Ken, can you come back up?
Mr. Chair, I'm sorry I missed your testimony earlier, but I'd be interested in you working with the revenue office to give us a breakout by county and PSAP, how much money is coming out of the fund to each of those PSAPs across the state, how much we've spent on each of the PSAPs, and then secondarily, in addition to that, what it costs really to build up a 911 center. How are you guys making the distribution? I understand how you're making the distribution decisions. What's the threshold level to provide 911 service by thousands or whatever? You know, some of these counties are saving up their money to build a PSAP center and whatever. I'm interested to know what it costs to build a PSAP center generally.
Well, I can give you the cost of what it takes to build a 911 telephone answering portion, because we don't deal with the rest
right.
of the cost. I can do that, and how we determined what we were going to pay per PSAP to upgrade them to enhanced. I can give you that stuff, sure.
Right.
I have most of that already.
And then if you could identify on the, when you break out by county and then by PSAP, how much money they've received, if you can identify what level of service they're providing. Some of these may have some of the GIS service, some may not. I don't know.
Right now, there's no GIS being paid for with 911 dollars.
So everyone's at an enhanced 911.
everybody is at enhanced 911 level, everybody's at the same level of technology. It's just a different number of consoles, et cetera.
And has each of the 911 centers submitted plan, each of the PSAPs submitted numbers to you for to do the GIS?
No. We're basically doing that because it's going to be an expense of the enhanced program. That's what the pilot's for, to go out and see what kind of costs we're going to encounter, and mainly that's building the database. There may be some issues, such as the Metro County, where the costs are going to be very low because they do have, in other parts of the county, such as the Metro, does have a GIS, very significant GIS program. Some other county has a very significant GIS program, that it's just a matter of converting their CAD system to display it by changing the Latin long. And those are about five or six. The rest of them are basically nowhere near that. And that's what we have to determine, what it's going to take to do that, build that database, and allow them to have the ability to take a Latin long that comes down the pipe with a 911 call, extrapolate it into an address, and put it on a map and show them where the call is.
Okay.
In addition, in terms of, could you add a column on that? I don't know how hard this would be just to understand in terms of how much money is sitting out in each of these PSAPs in terms of unexpended dollars they receive from the state.
Representative, we'd have to contact everyone here. When you're talking about the numbers of dollars spent, do you want us to go all the way back to the beginning of the program? Or the last 2 years, last 5 years? I mean, back in the 80s, we're going to have to go and try to find archive information on that.
Whatever's readily available. Go back as far as you can, whatever's readily available.
Be glad to do that.
One of the impediments that's been identified to consolidating has been the cost of facilities that would be large enough to allow a consolidation. Has there been any discussion about potentially allowing the use of the funds to allow for that kind of an expenditure so that consolidation could occur?
That would require a law change. Right now, the law specifically states it's used for enhanced 911 purposes only. We were given some discretion there on what enhanced was, but anything beyond that is traditionally, since we started this program in 81, the ancillary costs of buildings and things like that weren't included. Police cars or stuff like that weren't included. We strictly pay for, basically our template is what it takes to get the call from the public to the public safety answering point. Beyond that, for dispatch and stuff, and that's on the local government side to handle. We don't pay for that.
I understand that.
But we've given them the choice that the monies that we pass through, some people have spent it, some have banked some of that for other issues that happen in their building, like a recorder that goes down. Well, a recorder can cost upwards of $40,000. That's another little expense because it's recording a 911 call that's necessary for a court, except all the other issues that we do. So we've left them the latitude on the pass-through monies within a framework of what they can spend it on. The enhanced is very specific on what the dollars can go for.
I guess I was kind of taken aback with expending dollars at the counties that are spending it on the PSAP.
We have those three counties that are part of the distribution. They get pass-through funds. They do not get any enhanced 911 funds from us. They use those pass-through funds. In 95, we put in the law that if they ever wanted to go and do enhanced 911, that they would have to expend those funds first. So instead of the state paying for the enhanced 911 equipment like they do for folks that have been using it all along, they would have to expend their surplus first.
Are there any counties that find themselves short in terms of the distribution, having to add dollars to pay for the enhanced 911 equipment?
No.
Either I'm assuming that either there's surpluses on each one of these 56 PSAPs,
no.
If it's not broken, you don't have to spend any money on it if they're paying for an equipment. I find it very hard to figure out that, you know, the wisdom in 95 when they passed the distribution formula, that, you know, every penny that gets spent that comes in on technology, and, you know, and even keel, it's either they've got money sitting in excess in account, or it's not enough money and they're having to go on the other side of the equation and put additional dollars in. So my question comes down to the distribution formula and in terms of how the dollars are being spent out of that fund.
The distribution formula was changed back in, 89. The enhanced 911 equipment, that cost is paid directly by the state. There's nobody that's short of providing the equipment needed to answer a 911 call. The issue of the pass-through monies and what they choose to expend those on within the framework of they have to pay for a call taker, if they need a new call recorder, et cetera, their choice of how they spend it, if they want to do a backup center, bring a redundant system in, they can use that money for that area. So there are some that probably have some money I don't think there's any large surpluses out there, but there's probably some that have a reserve fund for a recorder that goes out, things like that. I will try to get that information to you probably within a week and a half. It's going to be an extensive process.
Work with Larry and we'll reschedule the bill. Okay. Is there any further discussion? Last opportunity, is there anyone else who would like to testify on House Bill 2098? Hearing and seeing none, we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2098.